songs of love, but not for me. A lucky star's above, but not for me. With love to lead the way, I found more clouds of gray than any Russian play could guarantee. I was a fool to fall and get that. I hope, alas, and also like a day. Although I can't dismiss the memory of her kiss, I guess she's not for.
Good morning to you. You are listening to the new WHFR Journal. We welcome you, and I am Susan Morrell, sitting in today for Jay Kornick, and he is out of town at a very special conference. I hope he's enjoying the sun, and I'm here with Ned Apigian. I'm here with Ned Apigian today. This is March 7th, 2008, and we're experiencing quite a bit of weather here in Michigan. Good morning, Ned.
Good morning.
Mic check time.
Yeah, let's see if it's loud enough.
Mic check.
The background music's loud enough.
Anyway, I hope Jay's listening to us in Texas. Isn't that where he is on the internet?
Yes, I believe he is.
Well,
in Texas.
I hope Jay approves of what we're going to do. And if he doesn't, he doesn't have much choice, does he?
Well, he'll let us know. If he doesn't, he'll let us know. So, glad to see you here today. And the big story this season in Michigan is that all the snow we've been having this year, and that the 2007-2008 season is in the top 20th of the snowiest seasons in Michigan, and in Detroit it's the top 10 snowiest seasons on record. We've had 58.9 inches of snowfall this season. And I'm not too happy about that. I don't know about you, but and according to the National Weather Service in White Lake Township, they say we may have snow continuing through April.
Yeah, it's nice living in the refrigerator. Let me I thought we were having global warming problems in
the
world.
Yeah, what happened to that?
What happened to global warming? The ice sheets shouldn't be melting this winter. But anyway, Metro Detroit residents are saying enough is enough. I thought I was just saying that. Following last storm we had on Tuesday and Wednesday that dumped up to 10 inches of snow in some spots, and I know my wife didn't go to work, and it's not your imagination. This has been a tough winter. February snowfall set records in Flint. That area snow saw 29.4 inches. In the last 29 months, it's been ranking second in the month and record behind only 35.3 inches snowfall in December 1990. The communities north of M59 have been the hardest hit, ranging from 30 to 40 inches higher than normal. That's saying a mouthful. there's another interesting part of snow. Snow can be good for you.
Well, it can be good for you. How is it good for you?
Well, here's how heavy snows are good. For those people that don't have water all around them like we do, heavy snows aren't all bad. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers reported that heavy snows in February caused Lakes Michigan, Huron, and St. Clair to rise. Lakes Michigan and Huron have remained above average and should rise from 6 to 12 inches above their record lows, while Lake St. Clair has 8 inches higher than its February average. Unfortunately, the lake is expected to be 11 inches below its long-term average by August. So,
well, a little bit of snow is good because...
So it turned out to be a blessing, people, so look at it that way.
Yeah, we are losing water here in Michigan for various environmental reasons. And as we talked about last week, Jay and I on the show, that 25% of our water in the Great Lakes is being diverted away from Michigan, and I presume that's to other local states.
Well, that's news to me.
Yeah, and so it's happening, and the folks down in Georgia are having a drought, so they're looking for water, and they're looking for water out west. But
how are they going to get it from here?
Well, they have ideas. They're looking at it, so I hope that doesn't happen. But Ned, what we have coming up this weekend is daylight savings time, right?
Yes.
So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, this is the first time, for those of you that have not realized that we are now doing it the earliest than we've ever done before, and we're going to discontinue it in November, the latest that we've ever done before.
This is for environmental reasons, to save energy. We used to do it in April. Now we're doing it in March.
Yeah. It's not for the farmers. It's for other reasons. And let's see what some of the good hints are that you need to know. First thing you need to know, and you should mark this down, change the batteries in your smoke detectors and carbon monoxide CO detectors when you change your clocks for daylight saving time this weekend. That's Saturday night. That's the advice the Dearborn Fire Department offers to homeowners to increase their family's chances of escaping to safety in the event of a house fire or a gas leak. I noticed in my own house that battery was chirping, so...
Well, that means it's low.
It's ready, so it's going to be done anyway. So daylight saving time begins at 2 a.m. on Sunday, the time to spring forward by turning your clocks ahead 1 hour. So when you go to bed at 2 o'clock, or if you go to bed before 2 o'clock, make sure you move your clocks up an hour. The Dearborn Fire Chief, Nazi Hazimi, joined safety experts who say it's a good plan to replace your batteries in the battery-operated home detectors, carbon monoxide detectors. This is his advice, as we've already told you. A working smoke detector doubles the chance of surviving a fire, Mr. Hazimi said. It's critical to test your smoke detectors regularly and to replace the batteries and battery-operated units at least every 6 months, as well as in battery-operated carbon monoxide detectors.
Okay, but for the daylight savings times, that means we set our clocks 1 hour forward, so we're going to lose 1 hour of sleep on Saturday night.
And then we're going to gain it at 2 a.m. on November 2nd, the date to fall back by turning your clocks back for 1 hour. And I guess that pretty well covers the time issue for those of you that are anticipating the change.
Well, I think what it's going to give us is more light in the evening hours, so it'll get dark maybe at 7 o'clock instead of 6 o'clock, and people have more time to be out and about.
Actually, I noticed it a couple of weeks ago that it was 6:30, and it was still light. So I think we're going to start seeing it be light at 7:30.
Okay.
Next week, right off the bat.
Well, that
sounds... we'll all start feeling better. You know what they say, when it's light, you just feel a lot better about it.
Oh, yes. I always feel better when the sun is shining. So even if it's cold out.
Even in the studio, the sun is shining.
Yes, we have lots of bright lights
in
here.
We got our lights and the student union coming in.
Yeah. And we've been looking, Ned and I have been looking at the local papers this week. And according to the Times Herald, for Wednesday, March 5th, that Dearborn has been honored with a new superstore here this week, and it's called Walmart Superstore on Mercury Drive in the city of Dearborn. And Ned, I understand that you've already been over there and checked it out.
Yeah, it's. I wish I could say more about everything about it, other than I went into the store. I have the pleasure of taking senior citizens shopping once a week. And this week we decided to go to the brand new Walmart store in its brightly colored, painted walls and ceiling are cream colored. All their signs. I didn't know that Walmart had a blue sign logo. And they have, so I was brand new when I was there, and they have an interesting recycling place for bottles and plastic soft drink containers, which was absolutely brand new. I don't know what it would look like a week from now. And while I took the seniors to shop, I made sure I brought my recycling things, and I used the machinery. One of them kept giving us false messages, like the basket was full, and I called the people, and they went and looked, and they said, "There's nothing in the basket." So the computer was reading it wrong, and I made them bring it to their attention. And the interesting thing about the store, without reading in great detail about it, they've made a great effort in order to make the store ethnically friendly, which means they've looked at the ethnic composition of Dearborn, Dearborn Heights, that part of Detroit. They've hired people who are obviously Latinos that speak Spanish. They've hired a lot of Arabic people. And they announced that you should look and see the name tags on the individuals. And they've taken special care, which I have never heard of before, but to make sure they're selling ethnic foods to satisfy the needs of, let's say, the Latino community and the Arabic community, which is a little unusual when you think about a large chain store opening up its door. It usually does what it sells everywhere, and this is what we have.
Well, also, they're getting away from the normal hot dog fare, the popcorn fare, and the pop, and the, yeah, and the lattes, and they're giving us something different.
And they also did something that I trying to. They made an outreach to the various organizations in metropolitan Dearborn Heights, Dearborn, pertaining to the various clubs. They made apparently donations to these various organizations. Access, for example, the Arab community. Program that exists, and the Urban League involving the African American community, and were interested in what they thought about things and what they wanted to see. And they hired quite a few, well, like I said, minority and ethnic people, so that the shoppers would be comfortable.
Well, let me ask you this, Ned. How crowded was the store, and how crowded was the parking lot?
Well, you know, the store, when I went in there, looked pretty crowded. But unfortunately, we're having this snow problem, and the parking lots didn't have the capability to really be utilized completely because of all the snow. So people were parking haphazardly where they shouldn't have. And then they were giving away certain things. I remember everybody that went into the store came out with a blue thermos, a plastic thermos bottle.
Oh, so they're giving away gifts.
They were giving away that gift. I'm not really aware of all the others. And since I was there and I knew I was going to do the program today, I decided that I would walk through and see the general service area, be inside, not inside the cashiers, but outside. There's a new Subway store of which we're serving hot sandwiches. I didn't realize that. Seemed like there were more of those than cold sandwiches. And, of course, they had the bank and their customer service. But they were busy. They were busy.
And you were there what day?
The day it opened, which was the Wednesday the 6th.
Okay, so then is that where the seniors wanted to go?
Yeah. It's not usually where I take them. I usually take them to Westbourne on Wednesday. But this week they wanted to be there for the grand opening, and I guess they knew there were certain specials and prizes, and I'm really not capable of listing all of them. But the important thing about the new Walmart store is that in terms of the image of the city, this blight of having these large open stores sitting vacant, somebody has come in and occupied the space. Not only them, there's the other company next to the former service merchandising building. It's a gardening, I forget what they call it exactly. It's another catalog operation that you can actually go in there. And to see that whole area having turned into activity is a wonderful asset for the city.
Oh, I'm sure.
No matter what else happens, whether you like Walmart or you prefer other merchandisers, the city is really shaped up and doesn't look vacant. It looks like something's happening.
Well, good. I'm glad.
It's long overdue.
Yes, absolutely. We've got to move on to another story here, and I'm looking again at the Times Herald for Wednesday, March 5th, and there's a story in here about the Lashish restaurant that it has finally closed its doors after years of legal difficulties. That's a sad commentary that the owner was charged with $6.5 million tax evasion scheme. 350 people employed at 11 restaurants have lost their jobs. And the U.S. Department of Justice has charged that the owner skimmed and concealed more than $16 million in cash and deposited into non-U.S. bank accounts, converted into cashier's checks and larger building nominations to evade government scrutiny. Okay, so he has departed, and he is in Lebanon with the cash. And they also kept a double set of books and records.
Yep.
And so he has departed. And so it's very sad that this has happened to Lashish, because I consider that to be one of the better local restaurants. And my favorite dish at Lashish was the lamb vegetable soup. They had the most delicious lamb vegetable soup, homemade soup. It was fantastic. It was unsurpassed by any other soup at any other restaurant, as far as I'm concerned. And it was reasonably priced. They had a lot of health food there. They had a lot of health food drinks. They had carrot juice. They had smoothies. And then they had, of course, your traditional Arab American fair. Now, what do you say about Lashish now?
Well, my feeling is the same as yours. I think it was a sad thing. It's sad for Mr. Shaheen, who I didn't realize who started the first store in Oakman, on Michigan and Oakman Boulevard, was a former Ford engineer. I thought that was interesting. I had a doctor that's a cardiologist that used to own the Dearborn City Tavern, and his wife ran. And I said, what would make a why do these people get into the restaurant business? Because they say it's not profitable. I will admit that Lashish was my favorite Arabic restaurant, and I'm going to miss... My favorite dish was the whole deboned chicken for two.
Oh, was it?
Right.
Well,
and I'm not crazy about chicken, but it was easier with me and my wife because she doesn't eat anything. So if you get a whole deboned chicken, there was even enough to take home. So I'm going to miss that, and I hope the other people around town pick up the same. But I want to read something else about the machinations of this, which I don't think most people knew about. Apparently, his wife recently was sentenced to 3 months and had a 18 months. There's two cases involved in there, and I think we should cover this. This is interesting how they're involved. His whole thing was they were alleged that he kept this double set of books, in which... Susan talked about, and he fled to Lebanon in 2005 to avoid prosecution. In addition, they alleged that he had links to Hezbollah, which the U.S. State Department has designated as Lebanese terrorist group. But there's one thing you must remember. Most of these organizations, they have a lot of community service that they do, some parts of them. So I'm sure he must have made donations or was involved. This has happened before with other people that have been deported. They're making donations to these charitable organizations that have direct or indirect ties to the basic organization. And I have no knowledge with his interest. Apparently they said he was on the stage making a speech once that was not appropriate. But the $10 million chain sales were damaged by them and this business when it came to the public. This is one of the things that was a tragedy. A lot of people stopped going there because of that, even though he wasn't around. He left town. Published in these reports have said that in October, Shaheen allegedly conspired to... This is a very interesting part of the program that has little or nothing to do with the restaurant. Bribe federal immigration officials in Detroit and used the relationship to extort more than $260,000 from Lashish employees.
Yeah, that was very shocking.
From 1999 to 2003. This is not something you usually hear
about. I didn't know
about
that.
You're right. And the other part is his relative, this marriage business that they went into with his relatives. This is something that the average person doesn't realize. 2 months later, Shaheen was indicted by a federal grand jury on the charges of conspiracy for his role in helping three Lebanese women obtain U.S. citizenship through fraudulent marriages. One of the women, Shaheen's sister-in-law, Nada Prudi, parlayed the marriage into sensitive jobs with the CIA and FBI. How can you believe this?
I can't believe it. It's very shocking.
Where she gained unauthorized access to files relating to Hezbollah, of which he's accused to be associated with, and investigations of the FBI was conducting on him. Prudy recently pleaded guilty on charges of stemming both from the fraudulent marriage and her misdeeds with the FBI. So you think the FBI and the CIA are really clever, right?
Well, yeah. My question is, why didn't they figure this out before they hired her? That's my point.
Well, they didn't figure it out, obviously. So here's how it continues. The latest blow came recently on February 22nd with the sentencing of Shaheen's wife, Elfat El-Awar, who also was the company's financial manager, to 90 days in prison, as I indicated a minute or so ago. The sentence was simultaneous with an 18-month term she got last May for helping Shaheen avoid $6.9 million in federal income taxes from 2001 to 2005. Her citizenship, which prosecutors said she fraudulently obtained, has also been taken away. This pretty much culminates the issue of the Lachish restaurants, and I really feel bad about the 300 employees. How many other Arabic restaurants are going to be able to absorb 300 people?
Well, I don't know, but they had very, very high quality. That was an excellent restaurant. It was very, very clean. The waiters and waitresses were excellent. The food was excellent. I never had a bad morsel there. And it was just a lovely environment, the way they set up the restaurant. It was very, very pleasant.
It's really unfortunate because I know a lot of people who come to Detroit and would always look forward to going to Lachish as well as the casinos. So as we're talking about bright spots that have opened up in Dearborn Heights, we just had to talk about this, which is not a bright spot, but unfortunately it's news and you need to know. The thing I can't figure out, and I was discussing this with Susan earlier, here we had an establishment, this guy owed the government so much money, why not let the managers of this organization and announce it to the world that the restaurant's being taken away from the family, and the managers and the employees are running it, and they'll make a salary for themselves, and at the same time, whatever profit is generated by the corporation post-taxes, after they pay their present taxes and are not in arrears, would go towards paying their debt. I don't understand that at all. But there's one thing I'd like to let the listeners do.
I do.
Yeah, the government does stupid things.
Well, you know, if you owe them money, the IRS, my understanding is relentless. And if you leave the country with $20 million and they're looking for you, they might be a little bit annoyed. And since they put his wife in jail, I think that was just kind of the end of it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I would have put her to work in the restaurant myself if I was the dictator. Now I got to feed her, clothe her, and take care of her health care.
Right.
When I could have put her to work. But
right. Well,
that's
a
side only for me. Maybe it doesn't make any sense.
No, they have their own laws. Well, their laws, you know, their laws and their penalties involved for not paying your taxes. So let's remember that, folks.
You got to remember one thing. You know, I worked in the Middle East for 2 years, in Saudi Arabia and in the island of Bahrain. These are cultures where the government doesn't take any of your money. Like, I don't know, at the time, 25 years ago, I was making $40,000 a year. And if you multiply times, I don't know how many pennies that is, four million,
okay,
whatever. Well, when you went to cash your check, even as an American called an expatriate working overseas, they gave you all your money. They didn't take any of it. So here are a bunch of people that are used to paying no taxes, and also you don't get any services.
Well,
when it rained, the streets were flooded, the sewers didn't work. People threw their garbage out the window, and it just stood out there. Somebody came by. But the idea was that, you know, this is mine, and you have no right to it. And this is all has to do with greed. My wife always tells me, go get a job that pays $100,000. I'll be happy to pay the tax, and I'll take the rest.
Thank you. She's got a lot of good ideas.
I'll take the rest. She didn't say I could keep the rest.
Right. Well,
anyway, that takes care of Mr. and Mrs. Lachish.
Yeah, so
or Mr. and Mrs. Shaheen.
Yes. And so we're going to move on to another story here.
Don't we want to hear from Jay pretty soon so they won't get tired of listening to us? He's got a two-minute interview.
Well, we do, but I just want to squeeze in one more little story, and then we're going to go to an interview. This is in the Detroit News, and, of course, this has been the news in the city of Metro Detroit for quite a number of weeks now about Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick's troubles in the city of Detroit. And
thank God it doesn't affect Dearborn, right?
Yeah.
Or Dearborn Heights?
Well, we'll see. Wayne County Election Commission has approved the wording that will appear on the petition, and it's a petition for the mayor's recall, and it gets the go-ahead. And the petition language calls for Kilpatrick to be removed from public office because of the $8.4 million the city of Detroit paid to settle a whistleblower's lawsuit brought by Detroit police officers.
Three of them, right.
And so that's just a little update. That petition is going to need 57,000 signatures to put the issue before the Detroit voters. And the city has 10 days to appeal the ruling. So,
what's the date of that? Because I have something else
well,
here.
Well, this is the date of this paper is Thursday, March 6th.
Well, in the news reported on March 5th, there's something about the consul was denied access to his text messages, and that they had tabled this issue of his resignation. Apparently, there's some changes in votes, and it seems to be. So the council will go has hired an attorney by the name of Goodman. So the council will go to court to demand the messages that are at the heart of the City Hall's scandal and an $8.4 million whistleblower case. These two things are tied together. In the meantime, and despite impassioned testimony from Detroiters, the council backed off its plan Tuesday to vote on a resolution demanding Kilpatrick's resignation. So that's a recall that you were talking about, and they are not asking for his resignation yet. The contention is that the Wayne County prosecutor, Kim Worthy, is to finish her investigation into the settlement. In other words, the deal that the settlement was made into previously with the policeman. Apparently, the council was duped into making this arrangement, not knowing all the facts. And what we have here is Kenneth Cockrell, who is, I guess, the chairman of the president of the council. Here's what he says. We have to look below the surface of the water to see how big the iceberg is. Council President Kenneth V. Cockrell, Jr. said, urging his fellow members to delay a vote, asking for his resignation until they have had more information. However, that more information, there are questions of what does the city charter? There's a new city charter that has been in effect from 1994 to 1996. The charter may not say anything about the mayor's personal activity, but how it affects the city had to pay the $8.4 million. There's quite a bit to think about.
I think, Ned, it's more about the public funds, the use of public
sure,
funds,
right.
and then the perjury, charge of perjury.
Right. I was going to just read that. We have not only found the smoking gun, but we have found the bullets, said Councilman Kwame Kenyatta. That's what I was just going to bring out. The secret that revealed the secret deal he voted against the delay. This is hurtful and is difficult, but it must be done. So apparently some of the council people are being threatened. They claim in council chambers, it was said union leaders had called council members and suggested they would lose their union support for re-election if they went through with their plan to ask for Kilpatrick's resignation. That's interesting.
Yeah, really.
However, the people that are willing to wait a little bit are saying the following, and it makes sense. Well, why can't we wait a couple days or a couple weeks? I do feel, this is a quotation from Sheila Cockrell, I do feel the city is facing what is equivalent of a constitutional crisis, said Sheila Cockrell, adding that her decision to delay the vote should not be viewed as support for Kilpatrick. We should not be pushed as a body. I don't know who's pushing her. But there is a 73-year-old woman who got to express herself and said, this is referring to the mayor's action. The mayor's actions are an embarrassment. He was disrespectful to Christine Beattie. He was disrespectful to the three police officers. And he was disrespectful to the city. And he was really disrespectful to $8.4 million.
Well, I think it's, yeah.
Money.
Yeah, I think it's public funds issue and the issue over perjury lying on the witness stand. So
yes,
that's where that stands. You are listening to WHFR Dearborn. This is the new WHFR Journal, and I am Susan Morrell, sitting in for Jay Kornick today, who we hope is enjoying the sunshine in Austin, Texas. And sitting here with Ned Apigian, we're going over the local news and views. These are our opinions and belong to no one else at the college or the radio station. And
we're making waves over here.
And we're making waves, yes.
We make these waves.
And we have something to play here by Jim Hightower. And he's giving his commentary on the stimulus program that that the government has approved. So stand by.
And wait for your tax return.
Right. Okay, we're having some technical difficulties.
Technical difficulties.
Technical
we can't
difficulties,
afford.
As they say. So that did not quite work, but
we'll have to substitute Mr. Hightower.
I'm going
to
try it one more time.
Here, okay.
Here's take two.
My patience is great.
Take two. Okay, that is not working, so...
Our fault. The machine is broke.
Okay, so we'll go back to...
Or the tape recorder.
Let's go back to some of the articles, because we've got plenty of material here to talk about, and the Democrats are having major problems in Michigan, as everyone knows, and, because we went to the ballot bowl and we voted and we got our votes in, and unfortunately our votes aren't going to be counting according to the Democratic National Committee. And so let's review that issue now.
Well, the first thing is, apparently, as you're hearing on the news, the parties have made agreements with certain states who's going to go first in some order. And we have this, in my own view, this ridiculous idea that Iowa, with its 50,000 people, and New Hampshire, with its not representative population, that the politicians, they have to be absolutely first. And whoever wins those two things, then it's a snowball. The rest doesn't mean anything. Well, here in Michigan, Congressman Dingell's wife, Debbie Dingell, and Senator Levin decided that they didn't want to put up with this. They were going to have the Michigan primary be early, violating the rules of Michigan being later. And as a consequence of that, the Democratic Party, the National Democratic Party, said, no, you can't do that. And if you do that, nothing counts. And then everybody proclaimed that they would not campaign in Michigan, and some people withdrew their names. However, Hillary kept her name on the ballot, and what happened was Hillary won the Michigan primary. So then the Democratic Party says that doesn't count. So now they're looking for every vote, and they need the votes of Michigan and Florida, which is about 300 delegates, in order to see how the outcome of this election, primary election season, is going to come out. Hence, now Michigan is confronted, do we have another primary or another caucus? That's just setting the stage before we talk about the details of it.
Well, the problem with another primary or another caucus, my understanding is that it's going to cost money. And Michigan doesn't have any money. We're having budget problems.
Yeah, well, that's true. So
right?
Let's go into the national and Michigan delegate count so you can see how significant this is. After Tuesday's primary and caucuses, here's the latest delegate tally for the Democratic presidential candidates. Barack Obama has 1,562, Hillary Clinton 1,461, about 100 difference. Needed for nomination without Michigan or Florida is 2,025. So they're about 700 delegates away. Needed for nomination with Michigan and Florida delegations, the number moves up to 2,208 instead of 2,025. So by gain, I don't know what you gain by having Michigan and Florida, it just increases the delegate count, as you could see here by the numbers. So in Michigan, apportions its 128 pledged delegates, and then the result is January 15 primary. Here's how it would have been allocated: 73 to Clinton, 55 uncommitted. Now the question is to redo this and see what happens to the Clintons, this division of uncommitted, and who gets the uncommitted. Presumably Obama gets the uncommitted.
Well, you know, it wasn't done fairly. I mean, I'm not happy with the Democratic National Committee over this issue, their rules. In my view, they have too many rules. They're disenfranchising the voters, not only in Michigan, but in Florida as well, with their rules. Because why should our votes not count? Why should we have to go back and do it over again and then make rules? And then Obama didn't stay on the ballot because he was abiding by their rules. John Edwards didn't stay on the ballot because he was abiding by their rules, and these rules.
Hillary didn't in this case.
And Hillary went ahead and got on the ballot, and then we were told unofficially to vote uncommitted, but we were also told that all uncommitted votes would not be counted. That's what we were told. And so it's turning into a major disaster as far as I'm concerned, and it's all caused by the Democratic National Committee, and I hope they're listening.
Well, you know what's interesting? So, you said vote uncommitted, and I know I'm an active person in Democratic Party politics, and I went to the meeting of which they were standing up encouraging people to do that. Now, I don't know how people not involved with Democratic Party politics got, they must have been in the paper,
well,
vote uncommitted.
Yeah. It was in the paper. It said, you know, said all the uncommitted votes would not be counted, because how could you count them?
They'll be counted at the convention, presumably, when they're released.
I mean, uncommitted voters could have been voting for Edwards. They could have been voting for Obama, or they could have been voting for someone else who was not on the ballot.
Well, the solution to this problem is to stop this foolish thing that we're doing. The best way to do a primary and to do it quickly and cheaper is to take all the New England states. I have a daughter there. I go to New England on business every month, at least once a month. The Boston television market goes to New Hampshire, goes to Vermont, goes to Maine, goes to Connecticut. Is to take the New England states, which are pretty well clumped together, and their advertising market is easy. You can campaign in New England easily, and so you have Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, Vermont, Maine, and New Hampshire have a primary on one day, and you allow 2 to 3 weeks for the candidates to campaign there. Then you go to the Mid-Atlantic. You do New York, you do Pennsylvania, you do the Middle Atlantic states, then you do spend 2 or 3 weeks there with Maryland.
Ned, that is a wonderful idea, but the problem is, everybody's saying you can't change the rules midstream. We're in the middle of a mess.
I'm not talking about midstream in the future. So then,
in the future, yes.
Then you do the Southeast. You do Florida, Georgia, South Carolina. Then you go to the Midwest. You do Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, Wisconsin. Then you go to the northern tier states, North Dakota, South Dakota. But you group them together. Then you do the West Coast. Then you do the Southwest. You're talking about having 6 primaries all conducted and give each candidate 2 to 3 weeks in that region.
Well, I think it's a wonderful idea.
And then this whole thing would be over with in 3 months.
I agree.
Instead of 3 years.
Well, that's a wonderful idea. It's a great solution for next time. But the problem is this time, what are we going to do? And I don't think it's right that our votes are not being counted in Michigan and in Florida. We're being disenfranchised by the Democratic and National Committee.
Unfortunately, nobody knows what's going to happen with this.
But I mean, it's just a terrible predicament. But anyway, we have to allow them to it's going to be resolved one way or the other.
Well, the Democrats, who seem to think they have their pulse on Democratic issues, have this issue of superdelegates.
Right.
You got to remember the Republicans do not have superdelegates. Now, I don't understand why.
And people aren't happy with the superdelegate solution either.
I don't know. It makes some sense. After all, to ask the people who are governors and senators and congressmen who are really elected by the people and are important people in the political process, there's no question these are important people in the political process, to give them a vote in the decision making. I don't find a problem with that.
Yeah,
it seems logical, but it seems to me both groups should have it.
But truthfully, I don't even think it'll get to that. I think it'll be decided before that. There are a number of states that haven't voted yet. Pennsylvania is coming, and I think it's pretty much going to go one way or another. But the fact remains, Michigan and Florida are still being counted out. So I don't really see a happy solution to this dilemma. Either way, whatever way it's decided, it's probably going to be unhappy for the Obama supporters or unhappy for the Clinton supporters. Although, my understanding is that the voters would vote for either candidate.
That's changing now. Mrs. Clinton's attitude lately is really strange to me. But
okay, let's talk about that.
As far as I'm concerned, being a Democrat, I would vote for whichever one turns out on the thing, turns out to be the leader, whatever. I mean, wins the primary. But her attitude lately is really inexplicable when you listen to all the newscasts of the people. Yesterday she was saying, Mr. McCain and her were the only ones. I guess one of them was joking and saying, I guess she's going to be the vice presidential candidate on McClain's ticket. I mean,
well, what are you talking about specifically?
Saying that, she was implying Obama is not qualified, but she and McCain are. So that's why she has to be the candidate. And it was such a strange statement that the people on television were saying that's over the bounds.
Well, she's been saying that all along, but I heard somebody say that she's been hitting him below the belt, and he
doesn't seem to respond the criticism is.
Well, I think he's really, in my opinion, he's run a better campaign than she has, and because her campaign made too many mistakes, and I think he's run a better campaign, and because he's run a better campaign, that's why he's won so much. And also, I think he's really been a gentleman to her, and he's treating her like a lady, and I admire that in him. And I think that's something to look up to in him, that he has very good negotiating skills. I don't think he's hit her below the belt the way she has hit him below the belt.
Well, apparently he's going to have to start.
Well, he has run a campaign and he's been saying that he wants to change things. He wants to run a different kind of politics and away from the smear campaigns and things like that. And I think that's what he's been doing. And he's been doing, obviously, a wonderful job. If he gets too mean, I think the voters will turn against him. And they like that about him, that he's been more ethical. He's been kinder. He's been above board.
I agree with you absolutely. And in this last couple of days, my attitude about it was, I don't know, which one should I vote for? I like, they both represent essentially the same thing. But her attitude lately is really turning a lot of people off.
Yeah,
I
think that she went before the television cameras yesterday with some retired Army generals and said that Obama was not ready to be commander-in-chief and receive the important phone calls in the middle of the night.
You want to know something?
I didn't care for that strategy.
Nobody is ready to be president because there's no kind of experience that gives you that kind of experience other than my own philosophy is I prefer intelligent, articulate people. Intelligent, articulate people eventually figure out what makes sense and what doesn't. And that's all my requirement is. She could point that out, and she's doing it. But here's an interesting article that pertains to what will happen if Clinton's and Hillary loses. Well, that was interesting. This comes from 30 Plus from the Herald newspapers. One final point about the Clintons and the upcoming election. I predict that if Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton does not get the nomination of her party, there will be a parting of the ways between her and her husband shortly after the convention, or at least shortly after the election in November. I think he did as much to harm her chances as he did in helping her. Now, I don't know why this guy says this. Up until her recent attacks on Senator Obama, I assumed no matter how this race turned out, one was going to be the vice president and the other one's going to be the president, because there's just too many people supporting each group, and it would be too volatile not to join them together. But after this week, if this guy wins, he might not be interested in having Hillary on his ticket.
I think it's really a shame myself.
But
I don't think Obama would choose her as a running mate. They say that she needs him more than he needs her. And I think that's correct. So
so much for the national politics.
Yes, didn't you have a story about Andy Dillon?
Yeah, there's a thing about those of us in Dearborn Heights where our state's rep, Andy Dillon, is now being actively recalled along with 12 other representatives. And we had the good fortune to have our state senator be the Speaker of the House. I know Andy Dillon well. Actually, we both were on the Democratic primary to run for state senator in that 9th district, and Andy beat me. And he's the only person I ever ran against that thought was, if not as smart, a heck of a lot more better qualified than me to do what it is he's doing, because he's put companies together and failed organizations. Now, apparently in Dearborn Heights, we have a nice lady by the name of Rose Bogarts that's leading this charge. And in the newspapers recently, you're seeing the firemen and the police officers of Redford and the part of Livonia, which is part of our district and the northern part of Dearborn, defending him. Apparently, what Andy did is, this is what Rose Bogart says. Basically, Dillon is the architect of the $1.4 billion a year tax increase in the state that's already losing jobs. Well, unfortunately, you had to do something, Rose. And this is, she admitted that Andy Dillon's an awful nice guy, and he is. And there's only one way to solve economic problems, and that is either you have to, if the former governor, Engler, and what was going on is they kept reducing taxes, reducing the rates. And their purpose essentially was to starve government. Well, if you take all the money out of government, then government can't run its programs. So some of that taxing issues had to be raised in order to pay for the basic programs. We're getting down to the bone in terms of keeping our programs. The thing with Andy Dillon is interesting. And unfortunate at the same time. I'm sorry to see that happen to him. I personally don't think anything's going to come of it.
Okay, so what is the charge of recalling him and the rest of these people?
Because they asked for tax increases in the tune of $1.4 billion, and Andy is the person responsible for it.
Well,
that's what Rose Bogart says. And I'm sure he is, because he was the person involved essentially, along with the governor, in trying to resolve this economic package that with the Republicans
right,
in the House.
Right, right. I mean, so why should people be thrown out of office because the state is having a budget crisis? And we've been talking on the new WHFR Journal for the last year about the gridlock in Lansing, and this two parties couldn't resolve the budget crisis, and they've been cutting government, they've been cutting teachers on all the schools,
right.
They've been, you know, it's all about cut, and if the state needs revenue, we still have to have revenue to run the government for essential services.
Well,
I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah, but if your philosophy is to starve government, and see, what's going on in the last 30 years is to break the New Deal, Roosevelt's New Deal, how government is the solution of all problems. There's something I want to say about oil because we're running out of time that's very important. I couldn't believe this. We hear from politicians that we have to be self-sufficient in oil because we have these terrorist constraints and dictatorships that are control our oil supplies and we must become oil independent. Well, guess what? American people, given the demand for safe and secure oil supply in an uncertain world, the U.S. consumer should be excited about the availability of vast oil reserves in a neighboring democracy with a market economy. And guess who that is? Canada. Few Americans are aware of the importance of Canadian oil. There's a chart in the newspaper that shows the top 10 countries we import oil from. And guess who's number one? Not some dictatorship. It's Canada.
Canada, yeah.
1,864,000 barrels of oil a day. The next one is Saudi Arabia, which belongs to the Bush family. They're related. They're not okay? That's 1,004. And the next one is Mexico. So we're surrounded. We get our oil from Mexico and Canada. And then beyond that, Venezuela, then Nigeria and Angola. I mean, the idea that it's laughable. The next time one of these crazy politicians get up and tell you that story, we're getting most of our oil, and Marathon's going to create a new refinery in Detroit. This is so important. It dispels this ridiculous illusion that we're subject to being blackmailed by companies, countries other that are not Democrats. And let me tell you another little fact. We were talking about that affects you, about this mortgage. 7% of all mortgages are in default in the United States.
Well, that's not a high percentage. But, I mean, whose fault is it that? I mean, because people didn't read their contract. They didn't hire an attorney help them with the paperwork for the mortgage crisis, you know, with their mortgage when they purchased their home. I mean, you should have enough common sense to know whether you can afford to buy a house or not.
Actually,
the extra expenses along with the upkeep of the house. And then not only that, the people, the mortgage lenders and the loan officers weren't honest with people and qualified them when they really and truly were not qualified for the loan.
Well, what happened is, I understand, and I was listening to this, and I'm not an economist, I'm an architect. And that is, they took mortgages and they created investment things, and they made them like you can buy into mortgages and like you would on the stock market. So these are groups of mortgages, and you buy in. And then that's what happened, which never happened before.
Yeah,
your bank held a mortgage.
They created more risk.
Right. Absolutely.
Okay. Well,
what do we want to close with?
Well, we're
Mr.
just
Andre.
We're just going to say goodbye here because it's almost time for the end of the show, and I want to thank Ned Apigian for joining me here today on the new WHFR Journal, and I am Susan Morrell, again sitting in for Jay Kornick, and as we say, he's at an important conference in Austin, and we hope he is enjoying the sunshine
listening to us on his computer.
Right. Well, I don't know.
Susan, why don't you tell them about your show so they can listen to you, and then I can tell them about mine.
Oh, okay. Well, I have a pet show, and it's on the second Saturday of every month, and my show will be on tomorrow. And I interviewed a fellow from PETA for People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
There you go.
And so if you tune in to WHFR tomorrow at 10 a.m. You'll hear that interview, and we talk about a lot of pet issues, and that's one of our forum talk shows here on WHFR, the only station making waves. You are listening to WHFR Dearborn, and Ned, tell them about your show, and then we're gone.
Right. My program is called Then and Now, and I am on the fourth Saturday of every month, and the time is 10 to 11 on part of the forum talk shows. And my program is How History Affects Current Events. And the topic at the next program on the fourth Saturday will be an interview with Professor Ronald Suny of the University of Wisconsin. And we are going to talk about the Russian Revolution.
Okay, sounds wonderful. So don't forget, you can download any of the forum shows right from the WHFR website, whfr.fm. And you can listen live at any time, anywhere. And we thank you for joining us today here on the new WHFR Journal, another segment of News and Views, local news and views right here in the city of Dearborn. And we'll see you next time on the new WHFR Journal.
Just me and you.